welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Life Coach Cindy Chavez. Today is Wednesday, March the 4th, 2020. It's 4 p.m. New York time, and wherever you are in the world, thank you for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And we're happy to be taking a different tack. It's still Neville Day, so happy Neville Day to everybody. But now Wednesdays are relationship days because we've taken that new tack. And we put out there last week, Cindy, that we wanted to have people ask us questions. And we got questions. I mean, how cool is that?
Exciting. You know?
Good stuff. So I wanted to start first with a question that was actually posted on one of our previous YouTube shows that you and I did. It was from Josephine, and she says, I love your podcast. I have an idea for something you can discuss with a series of relationships with artistic creative projects, like Walt's relationship with computer programming. I never thought of that as artistic creative, but okay.
Right.
You can discuss book writing and the importance of letting the writing flow as opposed to forcing, and the same goes for attracting romantic relationships. So not really a question, but an interesting concept. I mean, I hadn't really thought about tying into creative relationships.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's an idea that artists, writers, singer-songwriters, which I'm all three, right? So I'm really familiar with this, but you're a musician and you're a creative. And so we talk about the muse.
Yes.
Right? And for those of you that have never heard that, I mean, I think most people have heard it, but sometimes there's this mysterious, you know, happening when we create something. Like I've woken up in the morning before with a complete song written in my head.
Wow.
Or a poem. Or when you start putting the paint on the canvas and you sort of are lost in reverie and hours go by and all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, look what I made. And it's that idea of like, where did this come from?
Because
sometimes it feels like these ideas and creations come from outside of ourselves almost. You know, it's like, where did I get this? Where did this come from? And we sometimes refer to that as the muse. People will say the muse came to visit. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so as a relationship coach, I kind of look at everything as a relationship.
Mm.
Definitely my relationship to my job, to my work, to my creativity, to money, to people, to my body, to myself. I mean, my higher self, you know, lots of relationship stuff. And she's right. It's all sort of following the same patterns.
It really is. Yeah.
And so one of the things that I hear some people say is that they're waiting on the muse. Like you hear people say, I really want to get writing, but I'm just, there's nothing there. I go to sit down to paint or to write and it's just nothing's coming and I'm waiting on the muse. And I always say the muse is waiting on you.
Yes.
Just start, right? Just grab the knitting needles or the guitar or the paintbrush or whatever it is. And you know, I never really thought about it that way, but this is such a great comment because relationships are the same way. You know, in the same way that if I put all the responsibility of my creativity on some muse outside of myself, and I'm not going to get anything unless the muse shows up, it's a different place to say, well, I'm going to take responsibility. I'm going to start and the muse will meet me. And I think we can do the same thing in relationships is say, I'm going to know myself well enough to know what I need and what I want and how I want this relationship to be. You know, not that it's tyranny or anything. Relationships are cooperation. They're collaboration. There's right. It's cooperative, but we have to be able to communicate what it is that we want to create. I tell people this sometimes and they're shocked. I'm like, you can create any kind of relationship you want. The two of you, or in business partnerships, maybe three of you, four of you, whatever, but you can create what you want.
This is true. Yeah.
And people are shocked. Like it's just something that's going to happen and you're going to hope for the best. Right.
Right?
No, you get to decide.
By the way, while we were talking, Josephine actually logged in on the live stream. So hello,
awesome.
Josephine.
And, hi, Josephine. I love your comment.
She also added another comment here. She says, love the show. Keep it up. Do you know Agnes Vivarelli? She's a big Neville follower, and I think she'd be a great guest on the show. So there's an interesting suggestion, too. I don't know. I recognize that name, but I don't really know who she is. Do you know her?
I don't recognize.
I think I've seen it on YouTube. Yeah. I'm not sure exactly where I've seen it, but I think I've seen her name on YouTube, but not sure. Anyway. And I loved what you said about how when we are dealing with creative stuff, the muse is like the external influence. But there's also the internal. And whenever I'm trying to create something, I always look for where my passion is about it. Where do I really feel about it? Because when I can tap into that, I find myself no longer looking outside. I'm now looking inside just because I'm feeling that passion, you know?
Well, I really think the muse is also inside.
It really is.
Sometimes we experience it as external because it seems so miraculous to be able to just pull these creative things out of the air. Right? It's like, where did that come from? It's all within us.
My sister is in the process of selling our mom's house. My mom passed last summer. My dad passed 12 years ago this month. And as she was going through stuff and, you know, sorting through old things, throwing things out and so forth, she found something related to what my dad used to do. My dad used to work at General Electric. He worked there all of his life. And there was an organization within General Electric called the Elfin Society. He became the National Executive Secretary of the Elfin Society, which was sort of a company-sponsored organization promoting employees getting involved in their local communities. So, cool. You know, volunteer type activity. And anyway, when she found this thing, she contacted the Elfin Society, found that it's actually defunct now. They closed it down, but there are a few chapters left. And so they've kind of carried on that way. And this one guy who's sort of a curator of a little museum asked for the stuff. So she's going to send it to him. And she also found an article that I wrote that I'd actually published online the day my dad died. Oh. It was basically a tribute to my dad and to everything that I felt about him and the happy sadness of his passing, because it was sad, obviously, that he had passed, but I was also happy because he'd been pretty miserable the last couple of months of his life. So, you know, we were all kind of glad when he went in that sense, but it was a tribute and she had never seen it before. I didn't realize she had never seen it. And she said that was a really well-written article. And I said, well, thank you. And I thought about it and I realized, well, I was feeling a lot of emotion at the time. So there's the passion part coming through.
Right.
And it was kind of like what you said. It just flowed out of me. I mean, it was a little bit painful, but it's not like I had to work at it. It just flowed. And I did know where it was coming from, but it was as if I didn't know where it was coming from. So, that's what I was thinking about.
It always just feels so amazing to me to have that flow going in a creative project. Mm-hmm. It's like it's just happening. Like it's happening. It's so easy. And I think you're exactly right. It's the passion that allows that.
Sure. Well, it makes it easy. Right? If you can't find the passion, I mean, that's where the writer's block comes from. Anybody who's ever experienced writer's block, it's because they can't tap into it. They can't find that feeling that they're looking for.
So sometimes you have to be, you know, I heard someone say one time, and I loved it, about learning something new. You have to be willing to do it bad until you get the hang of it and can do it good. Mm-hmm. And for those of us that have feel like we were born with certain gifts and talents, you know, this was my downfall actually, because I was a singer-songwriter at a very young age. It was always natural for me to write or to pick up a paintbrush and paint. Those things I didn't really have to work too hard on. And so when it came to things where I did have to work hard, I was like, I don't want to do that. It's too much work. I'll go over here and do this thing that's easy, right?
Yeah, right.
But when I think about that idea, which is fantastic, not being afraid of failure and not being afraid of just doing it badly on the way to doing it well, it's kind of like that with writer's block or any kind of creative block. It's like, okay, I'm just going to show up and I'm just going to start writing. And I'm not going to care. I'm not going to judge it. I'm not going to care whether it's good or bad or, you know, just I'm just going to start doing it. And that sometimes will just facilitate the flow happening. And it's so sometimes just showing up. And I think I just love this idea of talking about it in the sense of a relationship, because it's the same way with relationships.
Well, also relationships have to do with work and with working with people and working on your job, because there's lots of relationship stuff going on there. And what you were just talking about reminded me of something that Linda Armstrong and I talked about roughly 2 or 3 weeks ago. We were talking about Elon Musk, who, of course, among other things, is the creator of the Tesla motor car. And he was also the creator of SpaceX. Yes. And one of the things that my brother told me while we were visiting him in Florida in January about Elon Musk was that Musk instituted something with his employees to basically accomplish two goals. First of all, to move projects along. And second of all, to achieve the level of quality and excellence that he wants to achieve with them. the principle that he laid out was fail early, fail often.
Yes. Fail fast.
Fail fast.
Yes.
And it's brilliant. It's an absolutely brilliant concept, because if you aren't afraid of failing, you just go at it and you make, you know, tons of mistakes, you get to your destination a lot faster. In fact, they even have this really great video. You can look this up on YouTube. Look for the video of Elon Musk, SpaceX, all the failed rocket launches. They put them all together into this launch.
A whole montage of failures, right?
And they were great. They were really funny. You got rockets shooting along the ground. You got them going off at crazy angles and stuff.
Well, I'm trying to think of her name. She is the woman that owns the company Spanx.
I can't remember what her name is.
A self-made billionaire.
Yeah.
And she's got a TED Talk or a YouTube video somewhere as well, but it was about the fact that when she was a girl and would come around the dinner table at night and her family would talk, her dad would not just want to hear about their successes in school, but their failures.
Mm-hmm.
And they would celebrate their failures. So she talks about, like, I never had a fear of failure or was embarrassed that I did something. It was almost like I would say, oh, what'd you try new today? I tried this and, oh, it was so awful. Like, it turned out so badly and everyone would, like, celebrate it. Yay, oh, that's awesome. And she said, so I was never afraid to, like, try new things. I thought that was pretty awesome.
That is awesome. That's really good. That was actually something I adopted fairly early in life. The idea that if I didn't fail at least two or three times during a day, I'd had a bad day. And it's a very effective philosophy. The only problem I've ever found with it is it's possible to get into a rut of you're failing every single day. Law of attraction. You keep focusing on the failure and it just becomes more and more failure. So you do have to kind of be on the lookout for that. And when you notice the pattern happening, then you have to kind of shift it and pivot it and, you know, get away from it.
Maybe why this worked for her, because they celebrated it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
So it wasn't judged. It was just seen as, you know, part of life and something to celebrate. And talking about things that don't work and failing, I want to talk about another question that we got about being in relationships that haven't worked out and feeling hurt and how do we move forward?
Yeah, that came from Nasha, actually.
Yeah, and it's such a great question, because heartbreak is so painful. You know, the way I often talk about it is that when you have a relationship and then it doesn't work out, I mean, of course it doesn't feel good. Look what you've invested. You've invested time and energy, passion, money. You may have made yourself vulnerable in a lot of ways. And then, you know, I always kind of liken it to, well, and people think that something's wrong when they're feeling bad about it. And they want to hurry up and snap out of that bad feeling after this. And I think, okay, think about if you build a house with your own hands. You designed it. You put money into it. You put your energy into it. You hammered it together. You built it. It was beautiful. And then you watched it burn down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one would blame you for feeling bad, for being upset that you'd invested so much and you'd lost this. And it was painful and emotional and costly. And I look at relationships ending a lot of times the same way, especially if they're very painful and there's a lot of heartache. So as far as moving on, how to move on, I could talk about this for the whole hour, is that first of all, you know, it's taking care of yourself, taking care of yourself. And now this is going to probably rub some law of attraction people the wrong way. You know me, I'm kind of the outlier. I feel like the, sometimes a rebel in this sense, but I believe that we incarnated, that we came here to experience life on the planet, life on Earth, because we wanted to experience everything, the whole gamut of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So, and mostly it's that. It's not maybe everything that can happen, but it's all of our range of emotions. So
yes.
When you think about, we say this all the time, right? We say the reason why you think you want whatever, the new car, the great relationship, a bigger house, you know, a good job, great health. The reason why we think we want any specific thing is because of how we think it's going to make us feel.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, of course, our conscious self wants to feel good. So we're like, ooh, we see a fancy car. We go, oh, look at that. My favorite car in the world is a Maserati Quattroporte. And I saw one last weekend. And my husband was like, Maserati alert. And I looked up and I was like, oh, I think they're so beautiful, those four doors. And so why would I want one? Well, because it would be fun to drive. It's beautiful. I would feel good. It would feel good. That's all it is. We're always just looking to feel better or to feel good.
Sure.
Our conscious part. But what about the shadow part of us that actually enjoys sometimes what it feels like when our heart's breaking, or enjoys feeling sad, or enjoys feeling angry, or enjoys those feelings? We just like, we want to shove that down, pack it away, don't look at it. We say, oh, not me. I don't ever get angry. I'm not sad. I feel great. Put a smile on. I'm telling you, I was a pro at putting a smile on my face and acting like everything was okay when it wasn't. And I finally recognized, well, maybe it's, you know, it's okay. Yeah. You've heard me say this a million times, but it's okay. It's okay to feel those things.
It is.
It doesn't mean you want to live there forever. But most of the time, even when we get something that makes us feel really good, we don't want to live there forever, right?
Which is like, a little strange, but yes.
I saw you got a new car. Oh, yeah, I had it for a couple of years, and then, you know, I got tired of it, and I got another one, right? So I think the first thing is, if you're feeling really sad, and you're feeling heartbroken, and you've been hurt, first of all, it's okay. And I mean that in the sense of, who wouldn't feel that way? It's okay to let yourself feel what you're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And then as far as moving on, it's taking care of yourself. And I mean that in the most basic way, right? It's like, I wrote a book about this. So, you know, you can find it on my website for free, or you can go buy it on Kindle for $1 and have it in Kindle format. But it's called Healing for a Broken Heart. And some of the things I address in there are about self-care on such a basic level, like, are you getting enough sleep? Right?
Sure.
Are you eating healthy food? Or have you gotten an eye checkup lately, or whatever you need? Just like the way you would take care of a child responsibly, right? It's like, you'd make sure it has everything it needs. Taking care of yourself on that level will help to heal your broken heart.
Sure. Because I mean, one of the things that happens in that situation is you're shaking things up. You know, instead of being stuck in that tape that keeps playing over and over and over again, you're breaking up the tape.
That's another thing. And, you know, this is interesting because it's Neville Day. It's always going to be Neville Day on Wednesday, right?
Absolutely.
When we said this, we were like, we'll still bring Neville stuff up because it's in us now. It's in our bones. I had this conversation, this suggestion for somebody that I spoke with last night. And this wasn't a romantic relationship. It was a business relationship. They were waiting to hear from someone and hadn't heard back from them. And I said, as you're falling asleep tonight, create a small scene in your mind where that person you haven't heard from is reaching out to you with some good news and you're thanking them.
Mm-hmm.
And have that little short conversation just over and over as you fall asleep. Just put it on repeat as you fall asleep. I would say the same thing to someone who's trying to move forward. Because how often do we replay, oh my gosh, like a breakup conversation?
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Can hear it in my voice just talking about it. I'm like, oh, because I know I'm guilty. I've done it, right? I've done it before, is just replay those conversations and those things and questioning ourselves. Did we do something wrong? Is there something wrong with me? What could I have done different? And it's like, no judgment or blame. Just focus on a different conversation, recreate a different conversation, even if it's just with yourself, and mirror work. We talked about that last week, but I can't ever stop talking about it because it's so powerful.
It is.
It's letting yourself know, you know, I know we shush people a lot, like even as little kids, right? It's like, oh, don't cry. But sometimes we need to cry. You know, there's an interesting thing is that our bodies make a certain chemical. It's probably the result of emotions. I think everything's the result of emotions. And the only way we can detox certain chemicals is through tears. I read an article about it.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Fascinating, right? So crying is actually good for us. Now, do we want to be crying every day? No. But sometimes it helps to have a good cry.
Sometimes it's whatever helps. I mean, especially if you're hung up on a relationship that broke up, anything that helps is going to help.
Well, one of the things Nasha said was basically it's like how to move forward talking about resistance, right? It's just resistance. And I was talking to a coaching client the other day, and I gave her a scenario that was just made up out of my head. But I said, so you're walking to your car and you get a text message from whoever, maybe from a guy, maybe from a family member, maybe from a friend, but they say something really hurtful and it's just like a smack and you get in your car. And I said, would you think it would be odd if I would be telling you this story? And I said, I read this text and it was so mean and hurtful. And I got in my car and I was just fighting back tears. I said, would that be odd for you, for me, someone to have that reaction? She said, well, no. I said, but listen to what I just said. Fighting back tears, right? What am I doing in that case? I'm resisting.
Resisting, yep.
And if I would just allow myself to feel the emotion, and emotions are energy in motion, emotion. They move through us. And when we're resisting, we're not letting them move.
Isn't that interesting how something like that happens and we feel the emotion and like you said, we need to hold back the tears. So we actually spend more time making ourselves feel the pain so that we don't demonstrate the tears than if we had just let it out.
And I always wonder, like, what does this happen because, I mean, I can only speak from my own upbringing and my own, kind of societal experience. But like I said, a lot of times certain emotions are just not allowed. Like, don't cry, don't be angry. All of those things are just like kind of frowned upon sometimes. And I wonder if we don't just grow up with this aversion to anything emotional that's not joy and happiness. That's always acceptable most of the time. I guess we can be joyful and it can be inappropriate, but most of the time it's acceptable. But I think that's really important that we let ourselves, that we're not afraid of feeling frustrated, angry, sad, whatever it is. It's never wrong to feel those things. We just have to remember to act in an appropriate way, right?
I agree with that. You might have rage,
and that doesn't mean it's okay for you to go, beat someone up or shoot somewhere. So that's not okay. We can certainly have rage and be inappropriate, but we can also process it in an appropriate way.
Sure.
And letting ourselves feel those things, they're part of life. Welcome to Earth, right?
Exactly.
You're not going to escape feeling bad. You're not.
Well, it's like Louis D'Souza likes to say to me every single Monday that we do a show. He always finds some point during the show to say, in response to some question about somebody being in a rough situation, his response adds up to, well, good for them. Now they have a very clear picture of what they don't want.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
That's it right there. That's why we have nothing to fear from these situations and events and things that we don't like.
Yeah.
The only thing that ever traps us is if we just keep focusing on them over and over and over and over.
But most of the time when we're focusing them over and over, it's because we're resisting them.
Exactly.
Right? I don't want to feel this. I don't want to feel this way. I don't want to feel this way. When's it going to stop? I don't want to feel this way.
Why do I keep feeling this way?
I feel this way and I'm just going to really let myself feel it. I've even had told clients, set a timer for 5 minutes.
Yes, right.
And just let yourself feel it. I'm not telling you to feel this way forever. I'm just saying, set a timer for 5 minutes and let yourself feel it. I heard, I think it was Gay and Kathleen Hendricks, who are very famous writers and coaches and relationship people. I heard them one time, I think they told a client to set a timer for 3 minutes. And during that 3 minutes, just really say all the terrible things that are going on in your head, self-talk wise, just say them all out loud for 3 solid minutes. And what they said, and I've never tried this actually. I pretty much got the bad self-talk to shut up. So, but I never heard this until after it wasn't an issue, but they said, you won't be able to make it through the 3 minutes before you're just hysterically laughing.
That's true.
And I was like, I got to think about this.
It's true. Yeah. Because when we're experiencing really, really negative emotion and not just experiencing it, but expressing it, it seems to go on forever. It actually doesn't last very long.
Well, and I think that you're doing it consciously instead of like having this kind of subconscious self-talk, because it can go on forever.
It can.
Oh, you're so stupid. You blew it again. Boy, you just, you know, that kind of under the surface that we resist and hear at the same time and we hate it and, you know, self-loathing kind of thing. That can kind of go on forever. But when we get really conscious and say, okay, I'm just going to stand here for 3 minutes and I'm going to just really say all these things that I'm feeling.
It's the difference between actually feeling it and describing it.
It can start to be ridiculous, right? So,
oh, yeah. Really quickly. In fact, it almost always does.
What's the word? Catastrophizing? You know, sometimes we make things much bigger than they are.
Yeah.
You say, oh my goodness, this was just an absolute catastrophe. It was a nightmare. I was like, no, the Titanic was a catastrophe. This is just like you're stuck in traffic.
Exactly.
So getting real about that and just being really clear about it, I think that's so important for moving on. And the other thing that's important for moving on is find stuff you love to do. Don't dwell on it. Stop looking at their Facebook page. Stop following them on social media and pining over them and wondering what they're doing, you know, when you're not together anymore. Find something that turns you on and lights you up. Get a hobby. Find something that's fun. Go out and meet new people. You know, somebody told me one time they had had a really painful divorce, and they said, I told myself I'm not going to eat alone. Because they would go out somewhere and they would see that one person sitting all by themselves at a table looking so sad and over, and they were like, I'm not going to do that. And so if they went out, they would like sit at the bar or the counter and they would talk to the people around them, or they would go out with friends, or they would call a family member. I'm going to come have dinner with you tonight. And they just made sure that they didn't suddenly isolate themselves. And I thought that was a really powerful thing.
Yeah. Well, sure. What they're doing is basically the Abraham Hicks pivot. They're not just saying, I don't want to be that person in the corner. They're also taking the time to notice that they could be going that direction and deliberately choosing to do something else right then and there.
Right.
Because that's what we tend to do. We tend to see these situations. I mean, it could be very easily turned into the other direction, where we see that person sitting in the corner and then we're constantly focused on that person sitting in the corner. And it just becomes this ongoing conversation with ourselves about that person who's just sitting in the corner, because we don't pivot. We don't switch away from it. You got to switch away from it to something.
Right. And something that you said, I think that's so important is not just the mental pivot, but also taking some action.
Right.
Right.
It's the easiest way to do a mental pivot.
By saying, I'm not going to eat by myself. I'm going to go out of my comfort zone a little bit and go find people to eat dinner with. And so I think that's a big part of it, is that just taking some action, like you said, that's different.
Mm-hmm.
Shake things up a little bit. And so when there's so many things that happen in a breakup, a lot of times it's hard for somebody to trust again. They don't know that they can trust, especially meeting someone new that would become an intimate partner. And what I always say is, you know, don't rush yourself into that. Find things you like to do and then find other people to do them with. Not that they might be your potential mate. Well, they might be, but just find friendships. Just build friendships.
That's the point I want to hammer for a moment there, because I fell into the category of getting involved with, in the back of my mind, hoping I'd find that special someone. And it wasn't until I let go of that piece that the actual activity itself became more fun.
Right.
Because it was always that little thing. Well, I didn't actually meet somebody, so it wasn't really all that fun. I didn't say that consciously, but that's the way it came through my subconscious mind. So it really is important to let go of that idea. To heck with whether I meet somebody who's going to be my next romantic partner. I'm just going to be meeting people. How cool is that?
Right. And, you know, I remember when I was in sales, I would have people go to some of these like networking meetings.
Mm-hmm.
where they pay, you know, you pay $20 or $30 and it's a big, the big round tables and they have a speaker and everybody goes and you don't know who you're going to be sitting next to. You're at a big table with 10 people and you give your business cards out, that kind of thing. And so many people are so, you know, downhearted about it because they think that the person sitting next to them might be their next client.
Right, right.
Right? Yep. And it doesn't happen that way. And so I remember always saying, look, and now I say it to people that are talking about dating because it's the same thing. It's like they say, okay, I'm going to go out and do something exciting. I'm going to go. I found out that there's a meetup that has to do with, you know, some game they like to play or something they want to learn, a class or something. And I always say this now, look, when you walk in and you scan the room and there's 15 other people there and they're all, you know, I'm saying this to heterosexual women. Okay. And they're all women and they're all 20 years older than you. I don't want you to say, oh, okay, this isn't going to be anything. Nobody's going to be here that I want to meet. Mm-hmm. It was like, maybe they have brothers or sons or cousins or neighbors that are looking for a partner. You never know. It's not that you're going to meet your mate. It's that you're going to meet people and that those people have a whole circle of influence.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, think so LinkedIn.
Just have fun. And that's what it is. It's when people go out and they start meeting people, regardless of the people, and they start doing things they love and having fun. It's like it's inevitable that the door is going to open at some point and they're going to start meeting people that are potential matches for them.
And like I said,
because they've let go of that.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the let go part. Yeah. And the circles of influence, that's the LinkedIn or the Facebook phenomenon. Not that I'm saying go out on LinkedIn and go out on Facebook right. and look for people, but you know, you are first degree friends with this person, you're second degree friends with that person who's friend with the first person. And then your third, I mean, it just goes on and on in these concentric circles. Right. They get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
That's the phenomenon that you're tapping into there, which
is, you know, I have people that have reached out to me because they heard my name on another podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And someone said something to them about me. I mean, I don't know them and they didn't know me and they've reached out to me for coaching and we have a great relationship now. And like, I had nothing to do with it as far as it's just, they heard my name somewhere. Right. So the same thing can happen with love relationships.
Sure. By the way, there's another piece of that too, that you were kind of touching on. I want to carry it there a little bit further. When we are constantly on the idea of, well, maybe I can meet my next person now through this activity. And we build that up. We're building that up in what Abraham calls the vortex, but we're not letting it in because we have that resistant quality. Like, well, it's not going to show up right now. And it's all women in the room, whatever. Or it could be attachment. It works both ways. But we're building this thing up. An interesting thing happens because we talked about how you want to just go into it with like, to heck with that. I'm going to meet somebody who's a romantic partner. I'm just going to meet people and that's going to be cool. When you finally actually make that break, which I did by accident. I didn't really know what I was doing at the time. I was just fed up with dating more than anything else. When you actually make that break, it's amazing how fast that stuff in the vortex shows up.
Yeah. Because
you've been building it for so long.
Yeah.
But because you kept blocking it, couldn't get in. And then finally you just gave up. You threw in the towel and it's in your face. I mean, literally, it happened to me within a month. I couldn't believe how fast it happened.
Yeah.
And when it did come, I said, I can't handle this. No, keep it away. I had too much heartache. But it turned into my wife, so it worked out just fine.
We've talked about this before, but I always think it's important to remind people listening about resistance, because we all hear about resistance. We don't want to have resistance, and resistance blocks everything from coming to us. But resistance shows up in two different ways, right? It shows up as attachment or aversion. Mm-hmm. So I always say that's the yes, yes, and the no, no, right? When we're averse to something, we're like, oh, no, 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 I don't want this to happen. I don't want this to happen. How many times do you hear people say, I didn't want this to happen, and then it happened? Because I was focused on it not happening. I was focused on it so much and there it came. But the same thing can be true with attachment. Yes, 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 yes. Let me meet the one tonight at this meeting, right?
Right.
Let there be somebody there that might be my partner. Please, that's what I want. I want it. Yes, yes, yes. And there's so much attachment. We're just full of resistance. And if you think about it, we've all been in both of those areas, maybe not with love, maybe with something else, but we've all had attachment and we've all had aversion. they both, you can feel them as your body, in your body, as like restriction or constriction, right? It's not comfortable and flowing and relaxed. It's just not. It's like, no. It's like that solar plexus crunches up, or our shoulders are tight or something. It's just resistance. So that's it's true. Just about to let go of it is focusing somewhere where you can enjoy yourself.
Yeah, that's good. That's good advice. By the way, as we were talking about this, I just remembered, had you heard that there's the new Secret movie coming out called?
I have not.
It's called The Secret, Dare to Dream, and it's a fiction story. It's not like a nonfiction documentary like The Secret was. Uh-huh. They've actually taken the concepts of Law of Attraction and turned it into a movie, just a regular movie with a storyline.
I didn't know about it.
And it's coming out April 17th. I've actually reached out to the publishers to see if I can find somebody from the movie to come talk to us about it. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that or not, but I did reach somebody, so who knows? Maybe it'll lead to something.
Very good.
The key point is, from the trailer, you can see the trailer on YouTube. The trailer is about primarily Law of Attraction and relationships.
Excellent.
And it's like right in our wheelhouse for the Wednesday show. So, you know, I'm awesome. Thinking that's something that we're probably going to want to, you know, tie into as that date comes
great.
Sooner. Yeah.
When is it supposed really to come good. Out?
April 17th is supposed to be the opening day in the theaters.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's coming
just
up real
time
soon.
Time for my birthday.
There you go. How about that? A birthday present.
And yours too. I mean, your birthday is shortly after. So, yeah.
That's right. Absolutely. A couple of weeks after that. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm sure I'm going to want to go see it. So that's going to be good. Also, I want to take a moment just to do a couple of promotional messages, because if you're liking what you're hearing here, we want you to become a subscriber if you're not yet a subscriber. Most people know how to do that. But for those who don't know how to do it, I'd like to put out these little promo messages and say, we've made it really easy for you. Just go to the homepage of our website, loatoday.net. And at the top of the page, you'll see instructions. You just click and you're done. And just like that, you're subscribed. And that way you get all 5 episodes that we do Monday through Friday coming right to your smartphone or whatever device you're using. So feel free to subscribe. We love having new subscribers. We especially love the people who've been with us for a while. The numbers keep growing. And by the way, as you keep subscribing, and all of you keep subscribing, you're feeding my manifestation. So thank you very much for that. I appreciate it.
Yeah. We've had this vision for a while now, and it's starting to happen.
It really is. Right. I mean, I mentioned it. I can't remember which show it was, but I think it may have been with Linda. Well, I can't remember which one it was, but I went through records. I keep records of how many listeners listen each month and how many episodes there were and all that kind of thing. And I looked first at February 2017. For that year, we averaged 90 listeners per episode, which was pretty good, you know, considering this started from nothing about 7.5 years ago. Well, February 2018, we had a substantial increase. It went up to 156 listeners per episode, so almost doubled. And then in 2019, didn't do the same doubling again, but it did go up to 185 listeners. This year, we averaged 555 listeners per episode in February. And we're already, just on the numbers I'm seeing right now, we're already pushing 600. In fact, I actually announced we actually hit 600, and we did. I don't know if we're holding it, but we actually hit 600. And I say that partly to say, well, look at what happens when you put out a request for manifestation and it shows up. Like, how cool is that? But also to point out that as this builds, I mean, first of all, my excitement level gets bigger and bigger every show. I think yours does too. I know it's true for my other co-hosts as well. Yeah. And the building also happens for our listeners. We're getting more and more messages from people saying they're affected, how much they love it, how much it's helping them. And that's like the best thing in the world, because that's the ultimate vortex as far as I'm concerned. That's the one where it's helping you, it's helping me, it's helping them, it's helping everybody.
And, you know, I don't know about you, but I can say, too, that as thrilled as I am to know those numbers, that I've just not been attached to the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. I don't really ever even think about it except to hold a vision of, like, people listening and the show yes. being great and fun and us enjoying ourselves and getting that message out there. And so it's like always like, oh, really? When you tell me, you know, right. the numbers, right? And I never really thought about it, but it's just the same thing again. There's really no resistance. There's, at this point, there's no resistance. I don't feel resistance about the numbers getting too big, which is a problem for some people. It's like, oh no, like that's too much. Or the numbers being too small. Just don't think about it. It's like, we're having a good time every Wednesday when
exactly.
we do the show. It's you know, we get great questions. We have great conversations with the people that are in the chat room live. And so, and that's probably why we're having this success, is because there's no resistance.
And speaking of questions, excuse me, Josephine actually posted one about 10 or 15 minutes ago, but I wanted to get to it. She says, what are your thoughts on applying the revisionist technique, which is the one that Neville taught us, uh-huh. when it comes to your own or other people's relationships?
Well, I will say that I've used it a lot with clients. I've used it myself. And I'm going to be really careful to say I don't use it for every single situation. And maybe that's because there are some times when I think the best thing someone can do is to walk away.
Mm.
And I'm mostly talking about abusive relationships.
Sure.
Because they happen. And so, in other words, every law of attraction, every relationship coach will tell you this, that we get people that come to us, and when we ask them what they want, what outcome would you like to have from working with me? The answer is, I want you to help me get my ex back.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, I have people that come and ask that, and they are still communicating with their ex, and they're trying to work things out, and they're both amenable to like repairing it. And they may be struggling, and it may not be easy, but they both want the relationship to be healed and to work. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic.
Sure.
But when someone says, I want you to get my ex back, they won't talk to me. They've blocked me on social media. I call them and they hang up. They've told me they do not want to be with me. I don't try to revise any of that. I don't try to use any method with that. The only method I see there is, you know, usually to ask the person, why do you want to be with someone who doesn't want to be with you? Because I don't want to be with someone that doesn't want to be with me. I want to be with someone that's just wild about me and loves being with me every single minute. And fortunately, I have a relationship like that. But so revisionist, I think, is fantastic for, especially for, like I said earlier, conversations.
Yes.
Really great for that. For conversations or when things just feel difficult, to stop dwelling on that conversation that was hurtful and create a conversation that would have been better and think about that instead. But the caveat, I think, in all of law of attraction is that as soon as we start doing any of these methods so that we can create a specific outcome, we are filled with resistance.
It's so true.
There's a Buddhist cone that says you can't make it happen. You can let it happen. But if you let it happen to make it happen, it won't happen.
That's good. That's right? Really good. Yeah.
And that's difficult. It's like, oh, so you'll hear me say this over and over. When you revise that conversation, when you revise that circumstance in your mind, you know, do it for the sole purpose of that in that moment that you're doing it, it feels better. It feels awful to replay a conversation that was hurtful. Every time you replay it, you feel the same pain. If you change it up to what you wish it would have been like, it feels better. And let that be the result for you, is that it felt better. Not that something different's going to happen in the future. And I'm not saying it won't. Most often it does. But don't let that be your motivation for doing any of these things. Always stay in the present moment. All your power, all your magic is in the present moment. So let it feel good to feel good.
That's really good. Yeah.
I told a client this the other day. I said, look, if you have a cheesecake in the kitchen, I love cheesecake. You may hate it. So this
I love cheesecake. So this is a good one for me.
I have cheesecake in the kitchen and I think, oh, as soon as the podcast is over, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go get a piece of cheesecake. Why am I eating that cheesecake? Is it so many more cheesecakes will come to me down the road? It's just, I'm eating it because right now, as I'm eating it, it's going to taste so good. I'm going to enjoy it so much. That's it.
That's
There's
true.
No other purpose to it. And so do these types of methods in that same spirit. It's like, you know what I'm going to do? It's going to feel great. I'm going to sit here or lie here tonight as I'm falling asleep. I'm going to imagine a different conversation. And that's going to feel so much better. That's it.
That's true. Yeah. It's a great combination, a winning combination of doing the vignette and simultaneously letting go of the result. You never really know exactly how it's going to come out, but if you can let go while you're asking, oh my goodness, it's amazing how fast stuff shows up.
Yeah.
By the way, when we were talking earlier, the example of the guy sitting in the corner in the restaurant.
Right.
Jeffrey says, I like being the person in the corner. I get a lot of writing done.
Well, you know, that's the thing is if you're there because you enjoy it and you want it that way.
Exactly.
That's awesome. This was a totally different scenario. I go to places and get my writing done too. I hear you. That's great. You can be out among people and doing your own thing at the same time. That's perfect.
It's a reminder. It's a reminder that it's all about perspective.
If you're sad and lonely, then that's different.
Yeah. Well, that's what I think the point is here. I mean, he's saying was actually to be funny, but I think there's also a real point. The point is it's all what your perspective is. How are you looking at the situation? Are you looking at it as an opportunity to go do some writing, or are you looking at it as an opportunity to feel miserable about the fact that you're not with somebody?
Right.
You know, and they aren't the only two options, by the way. There are like an infinite number of options.
Right.
But the perspective is everything. And we get to pick our perspective, which is really empowering.
Yeah.
I love that part a whole lot.
Yeah. And also, you know, something that I think is really fantastic is that as far as like Nasha's questions about moving on, I always think, or at least I thought when I was in that situation where I had gone through a divorce and I wasn't dating anybody yet, but I really waited until I was completely feeling healed. And I did all the things that I encourage other people to do. You know, I wrote a book, I remodeled a house, like
right?
I found things I love to do. I hung out with friends and it, you know, at first it was really hard. I was hurting. It was painful. But you know, everything heals in time. And I gave myself as much self-love and self-care as I could to get really healed up and started feeling better. And I had this realization that number one, I was willing to look back at my past relationship and realize what didn't work and why it didn't work and own that, right? And not only recognize a lot of those same red flags in the future, but own my own part of it too, right?
Mm-hmm.
And moving into being able to move forward is such a wonderful opportunity to be you, to be authentic.
Yes.
To say, you know what, I'm not going to hide anymore. I'm not going to pretend anymore. I'm not going to try to be something that I'm not to make myself more acceptable to a certain person. I'm going to be who I am, and whoever is going to be for me, they're going to love me for exactly who I am. And I'm going to love them for who they are. I'm not going to expect them to change or be different. And when you do that, it unlocks so many possibilities. It has to do with telling the truth. You know, really, there was a show on the Discovery Channel, I think, that talked about our brain when we're not telling the truth, that it's very stressful on our central nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
And when we, and I'm not talking about like verbally, like telling some outlandish lies. I'm just talking about so many times when people start dating again, they try to be something they're not. They're trying to be pleasing to the person instead of just being who they are. You know, if the person isn't pleased with who you really are, then let it go.
Yep.
Right. But when we aren't carrying all that and we're just telling the truth about who we are, and we're just being who we are, it frees up a lot of power, a lot of manifesting power, a lot of creative power, because our central nervous system is not burdened with carrying falsehoods about who we are. So it's a very powerful thing to just decide you're going to own who you are and show up being you.
Yeah, that's really good. That's important. Because if you aren't really you, who are you? It makes it kind of know
you'd
yourself.
Be surprised at how many times people will start to tell little lies because they want to be pleasing, especially women,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, so this really handsome guy is like got his eye on you and asks you out and says, do you like Chinese food? Let's go eat Chinese food. And you hate Chinese food. And you're like, yeah, okay. That'd be good. Right. I'm talking about little things like that. Oh yeah. I love football. Can't believe I'm watching football with this guy again. I hate football. Right. But I hear this all the time from people that, you know, oh yeah, I didn't really like that. And somebody that I was talking to about this told me that they had an experience where someone they worked with had the same experience where they got involved with somebody that I can't remember what the person had for a hobby, but they said, oh, I loved it. And that's why they got married. The guy finally found somebody that was just loving the hobby as much as he do. And then they told him, oh, I never really liked that.
Oh.
I mean, this happens a lot. So as far as moving on, if you've had a breakup and you can look back and see, where was I not, you know, where did I tolerate things that I shouldn't have? And where was I not really true to myself? Where did I kind of fake it just to make someone else happy? You get to figure those things out, and then because you're not in a relationship now and you're moving forward, you get to remedy all that by saying, oh, I've got a clean slate to show up how I want to show up this time. It's always, to me, a great opportunity to grow.
Well, it is. It also strikes me, too, what you were talking about there is really an opportunity to practice what Abraham Hicks calls pivoting. And I love having learned how to pivot because of situations just like that. Now, I can't say I've used it in that situation because I learned how to pivot after I got married. So I didn't really have that to play with. But I just kind of imagine somebody who is, you know, that people pleaser type who says, oh, yeah, I love doing this thing that you say you like doing, even though I really don't like doing it. And instead, because they've learned how to pivot, if they've taken the time to learn, and that's the thing, you have to practice it every single day. But if they've taken the time to learn how to do it, then they can say, well, I really don't like football, but I love tennis. Are you into tennis at all? And pivot to something that they might like. And then you can do a little negotiation to find out, well, what do you both like? We both like bowling. Hey, let's go bowling. You know, whatever it might be, it doesn't really matter what it is. The point is, by learning how to pivot, you can get out of that people-pleasing mode because you don't have to people-please anymore.
You don't have to. That's it. Yeah. And we don't have to.
No, you never actually had
right?
to.
Right?
But this kind of justifies it.
Yeah. There is somebody out there, probably many, many somebodies out there. Mm. I always am careful. You know, I wrote a book called that talks about soulmate success.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe I'm married to my soulmate.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I also believe that there's probably lots of other soulmates out there.
Sure.
Right? And so this idea of the one. Sure. When I married him, he was the one, and he is the one. He's my one today.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not the only possible one. There's billions of people on the planet. And so I think that that's important that we recognize that, too, is that you can be yourself, completely yourself. And there are plenty of people out there who will love you exactly the way you are.
Yeah.
That's and true. The first one is you.
Yes, that's absolutely true. In fact, the second and third won't come unless the first one is there.
The first one is you. You are your first love. And when you can, that's why we talk about mirror work on the show all the time. Mm-hmm. You can look in the mirror, you know, when I pass a mirror, I always just smile at myself like, hey, like, you know, I just ran into my favorite person. I just ran into an old friend, right?
Yep.
And that's where you want to get to, where you want to, you want to talk to yourself like you love yourself. You want to be with yourself like you love yourself. That's when love from the outside starts coming, because it's just a mirror of how you are with yourself.
Well, now you talked earlier, and you talked last week too, about how relationships really are all encompassing because we have relationships to everyone and everything in our lives. So from that perspective, I actually interfaced. I had a conversation with somebody online who was raising a question about this, and I found a second question, and I realized the two dovetailed. So I'm going to tell them to you both simultaneously, and you can kind of address them both in the 5 minutes or so that we've got left. The first one was from somebody named Natalia, who says, how can I stop my anxiety? It has been really affecting me recently at work and in personal life. I've been very worried about coronavirus, relationships, feeling stressed in general at work. And I'm not coping well, and I would appreciate any advice. And then the second one was from Margot, who wrote this on the Abraham Hicks Vortex group. She said, dear Abraham friends, I am currently dealing with a very strong, manipulating colleague, and I notice it's giving me a hard time. I feel emotional and stressed. I'm trying to find a way to change my point of attention, but experience that it is difficult to let go of the stress. Do you have any suggestions or advice on how to change it? And why did I attract this? So kind of two together, that really, they interlap. You know.
Well, you know, anxiety, and I'm not an expert on anxiety, but I know that some of the clients that I've spoken with that have mentioned anxiety, and even my kids, a young friend of mine was here. She was talking about anxiety, and I said, you know, every time I bake a pizza in my oven, I have a small, beautiful 100-year-old cottage that I live in, but it's little. So the smoke alarm is in the hallway right by the oven in the kitchen, you know, 15 feet away.
Yeah.
Every time I bake a pizza in the oven, the smoke alarm goes off, mm. right? And so we have to deal with that.
Right.
When we have really strong anxiety, our body's trying to protect us from something that it is thinking is going to hurt us, right? And so I always say, so you have to remind your brain, I'm just baking a pizza. The house is not burning down, right? It's like, this is not life threatening, but our adrenal system, right, is always causing us to want to run from tigers when we don't do that anymore. We don't usually have those kind of situations. And sometimes it just overacts. So I would say, you know, to anybody is, you know, talk to your doctor about it if the anxiety is really strong, but find ways to relax and to speak with yourself about it. Say, hey, I'm going to take care of you. I'm not going to let anything bad happen to you. And because a lot of times people have anxiety attacks when it's something that seems small, and that's why it's so frustrating, because the house isn't burning down. And so it's letting yourself, reminding yourself that everything's going to be okay, and get support wherever you can get it. You know, learn how to do some deep breathing, make sure you're getting enough sleep. And these are where you go all the way back to the very basic self-care stuff of eating right, getting enough sleep, learning how to meditate. Whatever you can to calm that down.
That's right? Good. Yeah.
Now, as far as dealing with a coworker that is, I can't remember the word that you used.
Well, it was very manipulative, yeah, coworker, and creating a lot of emotional stress.
You know, we could talk for an entire podcast about this. So trying to cover it in 1 minute. Sometimes it's boundaries. Right? Sometimes it's being willing, and sometimes it's really hard in a corporate situation. People worry that they're going to lose their job or that they're going to get a bad review or whatever.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's about, you know, at the very basic level, a boundary is letting somebody know what's okay and what's not okay. And it's like letting that coworker know that this isn't okay. Sometimes that's the right thing to do. Sometimes it may be, I'm not telling you to do that because I don't know all the details of the situation. But when you look at relationships as a mirror, you know, you can ask yourself a few things about that. Am I manipulating anyone? Or where is this actually serving me? Is this serving me in some way? You know, I heard a guy one time say that he had been single for years and years and years. And then one day he realized that that's what all his relationships were built around. He would go out with his friends and they'd talk about, I don't know why I'm still single. We don't know why you're still single. You're a great guy, right? It became like, he said, it was so part of my identity. That's all we ever talked about. It's all
right.
And he realized, oh, it was just kind of self-perpetuating. And then in some way it was serving him because everybody was always telling him, you're a great guy. And, you know, you're going to find someone, right? Everybody felt a little sorry for him and everybody was always trying to encourage him. And that felt good.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's like, what else is attached to the situation that's actually serving me? What payoff am I getting from this? It's,
yeah. You know,
get curious with yourself and non-judgmental and just ask yourself, you know, if there's some kind of payoff for this.
That's a great question to ask yourself, because if you can identify it, you're going to cut the emotional angst associated with it really quickly, because you're going to say, huh, I didn't really notice that before. And then all of that emotion that you were feeling just kind of bled away into the street. It just disappeared because all you could react to was, oh my God, I'm actually doing that, aren't I?
Yeah.
It's really something when it happens.
We'll talk about that more next time because it's a great question.
And, it is a good question.
It deserves more than 1 minute. So.
Okay. Yeah. I'll make a note to make sure that we bring that up first next week. By the way, if you have questions you want us to address on the show, feel free to send them in, like people were already doing, you know, Facebook, YouTube, whatever, send it to the email address, walt@loatoday.net, and we'll be glad to address them and include them on a future Wednesday podcast. So
we would love it.
Thank you very much, Cindy. As usual, you were your sparkling, wonderful self, and you gave us all the right ideas. So thank you so much for that. Thank you, live streamers, as well, for all of the insights and questions and the wonderful commentary from Jeffrey about writing in the corner. That was great.
Yes, thank you.
And thank you especially to all of our podcast listeners. We love every one of you so much, and we appreciate the fact that you continue to stay with us. We will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.